Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of my impetuous Jedi metal detecting science team. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. I sure hate this planet, and I'm willing to engage in irrational actions in order to get away from it. Just a city boy.
Makes sense. Kat Benish is also here.
Hello, and I'm willing to say this was the best episode of Star Wars ever.
I really thought you were going to say Star Trek. Like, it was weird when Wars came out of your mouth. Like,
I'm not sure that's actually true, but it seems like there's a lot of anger directed at this episode, so I'm going to take that spicy take. I don't really care.
I waited until last night to watch this episode, and then I watched it with two people that were named Dan and Kat in their house.
That's
true.
And so that means I have not read anyone's hot takes on this episode because I didn't watch it earlier in the week.
I just thought there was something like this number actually isn't true. Something like 700 comments. Probably been like 100 comments in the Discord.
The Discord thread on not our episode, obviously, because that's
impossible.
Doesn't exist
now.
Yet.
But the one about the Acolyte episode was quite long. I read it this morning. I do not know how many.
I looked at like two or three comments. I was like, oh, there's a lot of anger and hate. Like, and this fear leads to anger. I was like, I can't handle this much negativity or my coffee in the morning.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I actually have no idea how I figure out how many messages there are even in this thread. There's no way to know. It's a lot.
Nope. Only we had like scientists who could do a science mission to let us know.
Do we do a recap of this, or do we just?
Yeah, I think a recap.
This episode is entitled
"The
Choice.
Detectorists." Know what?
Choice. I lost my bet from last week, and this was obviously I should have thought of this.
I was gonna comment in the moment that I didn't.
You
should
have done it. You could take in the crown.
I know. I have been proven right so many times. I feel like I should have already deserved the crown by now. No, okay, that trailer we watched last night.
Yeah,
last night? So you gave me, well, you said, Tony, last night that I was right 40% of the time, which I think is a lowballing it. Whoever, and then what was we were watching a trailer last night. Yeah. What was the trailer again?
It was for the Captain America movie.
Okay, right. And there's a woman, and I was like, oh my God, that looks like the one from that other show we watched. Bones?
Nope. No. Not even. I mean, okay, close. Bodies?
Bodies, that's it. And it was her. I was right.
You were correct.
I will also
Are you
say-
just listing times that you were right in the past unrelated to this episode of Star Wars?
I will admit that Dan and I had two pieces of cake today. One piece right before this show, and I think the sugar
No one is like trying to like shake a confession out of you. How many pieces of cake did you eat? Tell us.
No, I just had this rush of adrenaline and sugar.
You know, this is one of the challenges of using torture as a method. Is, you know, people admit to eating any pieces of cake after a certain amount. You know. Unreliable. Anyway, so what you're saying is you've been right so many times that you're just going to retire from future rightness.
No, I don't feel like I need to say that I'm right every time because I'm right so often.
And then,
there is
as
so
an
much
example
about that sentence,
you then told us an unrelated story about a time that you were right.
That was
to
the
really
first
drive
part to
that
unpack.
Home.
Yep.
That being said, I think the one comment I did see in the thread somewhere was someone being like, "Kat, it isn't actually the show you're quoting. It's Working Girl, not the show you said it was." So thank you, whoever corrected me.
No, that was me.
That was Dan. I want to be.
Which was the show you said? Oh, someone, let me unpack a lot here. Because somebody suggested the show you were referring to was Remington Steele, a show we have referenced on this show prior to this.
I thought it was, we said it was 9 to 5. Oh, it was Working Girl. Okay.
Yeah, I was.
And the person you're referring to is Dan Morin, who lives in your house.
Never met him.
I think you have some things in common.
Happy anniversary, Dan.
Wow. So this is an intervention.
Could it have come maybe 5 minutes earlier?
We'll see. All right. Yes.
Okay. Someone want to do a recap?
I got it, guys. I got it. No, someone else, please.
Oh, gosh. I really thought you were going to do it. This is the coin flip of the previously referenced episode. Episode 3 was Destiny, which takes place 16 years ago. This episode is Choice, which also takes place 16 years ago, back when Maya and Osha were living with their family? Mothers? With the Coven of Force Users.
Witches. They're the Coven, yeah.
This episode basically portrays
the same events, but from different points of view. It's a little confusing because it's a lot of it is Saul, but it's certainly not exclusively from Saul's point of view. Mm-hmm. But we certainly see more about what's going on with the Jedi before they show up at the fortress and cause trouble, and there's a ruckus. So it is basically portraying the events that lead to stuff, but from a slightly more, I guess, Jedi / May inclusive point of view in terms of what things happen. So let us run down those things. Basically, we discover that these four Jedi have been sent to this planet because weird stuff is going on. It basically seems like they're on a science mission. They mentioned that there was some kind of hyperspace incident, and this planet is acting weird in terms of how quickly plant life is regrowing.
Well, yeah, so there's a hyperspace incident that, and there shouldn't be anyone there, right? Yeah. And there was, and this is the discussion, I think, let's put a pin in this, of a virgence, right? What is a virgence? Yeah. When have we heard of virgences before?
Yep.
Why is virgence is or is not a stupid word? Is it a word outside of Star Wars?
I believe so. I think it's like a...
It's like, is it a convergence without a...
Con?
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, how is it converging? Is it the same thing as, like,
interesting.
Interesting. I checked the first couple of answers I got were all science-y.
The simultaneous movement of the pupils of the eyes towards or away from one another during focusing.
I can do that. No.
Wait, so they moving differently is basically what it is?
No, movement of the pupils of the eyes towards or away from one another. It's when you focus on something, the pupils of your eyes.
Oh, interesting. Move. Okay.
Or geology, the direction in which a fold is inclined or overturned.
Is it more likely that George Lucas, who uses originally, like, convergence is a good word, but I don't want to use convergence, so I'm going to just call it virgence? Without understanding,
that's possibly part of it. It's not a divergence either, right?
Yeah,
so it's
neither a convergence or a divergence. We do get some kind of like inter Jedi work politics in terms of what's going on with the four Jedi. If you were hoping you were going to learn a lot about the Wookiee Kilnaka, I guess don't.
Nope.
But we do
works
learn a little
metal detector,
and he's very good at cooking like the Nuna legs.
Unclear if he is.
Okay, I think we're all pretty clear that the Padawan was
Torben. Yeah.
Torben was like he's the last guy. Yeah, like he's like like your road trip is like the last guy you want. It's like Torben, just like the
not,
metaphor
not
I gave while watching this last night was essentially that he's like Cyril Karn, and that but he left Coruscant. All he wants to do is go back to Coruscant. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the attitude I got.
He is,
I just want to go home.
You know, if you bring someone camping and they are just miserable the whole time, just a real Dan.
Dan's raising his hand. 100%.
Yeah,
it is the worst.
Dan doesn't like camping. And
God, if they sent me to this planet and there'd be like bugs and like I'd be outdoors.
Dan,
and I'm eating.
Mainly I don't understand why you go into the woods because every time you do, you're not happy.
Yeah. I'm working through some stuff.
He doesn't want to get divorced, so he goes into the woods with me.
Yeah.
It's weirder when you say it like that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that is the simplest version of that story. It's just
when you say it though, it sounds like a Blair Witch like lead in. We go into the woods.
We have the age down Saul and I'm blanking on
Indara.
I was gonna drop the D from her name, but it's Indara. So she's the like ranking Jedi master in charge of this thing.
And Saul also is clearly the most kind of with it. Like she clearly is like even it was interesting, we'll talk about this too. Like Saul clearly is, even from the beginning, is like a bit of an emotional wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Very tempestuous as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't seem like the best Jedi, though she seems at least like kind of together. And something is going on with Torben that the episode doesn't really get into in terms of like, does he just hate the woods? Is he having like, is he dealing with a mental health crisis? Like he really, really, really wants to go home in a like, and is basically willing to kill for it.
Which is interesting later that Torben doesn't talk for 10 years and is not on Coruscant. He leaves Coruscant and goes to like to the random, forget the name of that town.
If you're gonna go, if you're gonna meditate for forever, I guess it doesn't really matter where you are. It's like remote work.
But I think there's a degree of penance to some degree too. Like, I wonder if your fact says like I can't, if I'm gonna go do this, I have to leave the planet and I can't stay. I don't know. I digress.
All right. Yeah. We're about 4 minutes into the episode. Eventually, Saul sees May and Osha beneath the big golden tree, and he sees that he sees them being kind of disciplined by one of their mothers, the kind of the mean mother, if you will. He follows them back to, I guess they later mention that it's like a mining facility slash fortress. He climbs up the wall and he kind of sneaks around and peeks in on some scenes that we saw previously, but happens to kind of catch, I guess, some particularly not great scenes in terms of them training the kids and preparing for a religious ceremony. And so, like, he comes back and is like, we got to get these kids out of there, and that doesn't go over great with the Jedi,
which again, is anything he saw any worse than some of the training that they do to their Padawans?
There's a
lot of questions in this, and I think I think about the structure of this episode a lot, even as we're talking about it now. And I think one of the challenges for it is that it wants you to have the two opposing viewpoints, but the first flashback is not itself that much better for the Jedi.
Mm-mm. Oh no,
it's
no. Saul comes
slightly
off
slightly better, but it's like this one is. It's worse, but it's like, I didn't feel great about, like, if you're trying to do something from two different point of views, like, there's an interesting story to be told in, like, oh, the Jedi come in, they're saving these children, like, it's really noble, etc. Like, they didn't play that up in the first flashback.
But I don't think they're ever trying to do that.
No, but I feel like this is, you know, while
what's
there
the
are
point of the different
details
perspectives, right?
That we see that we did not know in the past, it doesn't make me feel any, like, if anything, I just feel worse about a thing I already felt bad about.
I think you were supposed to, and I think, honestly, it is less about being like an aha moment of like great storytelling of like everything you thought was true is wrong, but it's more of like, I thought this more about from Osha's perspective of Osha thought something horrible happened, and actually, yes, that thing is so much worse than you thought it was. And I think the biggest thing coming out of this is Saul, actually, who is a great character all the way, is actually now in my mind a despicable character, which is incredibly well done, because he's never done penance for what happened, right? So he goes all this, he is chiefly responsible for this for his own arrogance. And, like, it's his arrogance and emotion that he'd never done penance and took on Osha and sort of covers it. It's like, it's actually horrible, and because it makes the Jedi seem so much worse, again, plays in the broader theme of like, is this show really about just showing how partially awful the Jedi were, and the downfall of them?
It leaves me with some more questions than answers, which is not a bad thing.
Yeah,
but like, you know, when we meet Saul at the beginning of this show, he's teaching a bunch of younglings, which made me feel like maybe that was sort of his penance, was he went to be a teacher rather than to, because I feel like maybe they talk about him not really leaving. I don't remember now.
Yeah, vaguely.
I'd have to go back and rewatch some of the earlier episodes. Yeah. But what it also raises is all the stuff with Osha, too, which we'll get to.
Yeah. So let's step through some of the events. We see kind of the Jedi perspective of, like, I guess we got to go to this meeting. And, you know, there's, you know, it's like you keep seeing the, like, kind of, like, somewhat reasonable but also not good decisions they make. I mean, like, Indara orders Kelnaka to like hack into the elevator so they can go up, and they interrupt the meeting, and we see the thing where Torben is kind of possessed slash has his mind invaded from his perspective this time,
which
I don't know if I gained anything from that so much as maybe they just didn't want to show the long conversation again when it plays out the same, when there's not really a perspective to that.
I think they had to give, I don't think they could, they had to give Saul a reason to at least come back. And I think like having Torben being the weak point, I think it basically shows like both of the men had some things underlying that they were able to take advantage of. And I hope, I definitely, it's later on that the gender of the two of them versus the gender of anyone else is like, is very, very stark. I don't know how much.
Yes.
I think there's also some weirdness with that. Like that part of it felt a little squishy to me with his experience with Mother Anisea, because I couldn't tell what her goal was in going into his mind, because it makes her seem much more sinister, but in a way that does not jibe with everything else that we see from her, in which she's a loving mother, and she really cares about these kids, and she wants them, and she's ultimately going to let Osha choose what to do. Like, I don't quite understand why she does this to him.
Well, I don't think she knows. Yeah. She is trying to learn her enemy, right? So she's going after the weakest person, which is him, Torben, and trying to basically put him on his back foot and understand, like, well, I think she wants to make sure she has leverage. She's not a pacifist. I think this is from her just trying, and I think we see this too as we talk about like what actually happens, and going back to like the overarching takeaway from this show, right, is the idea of choice having consequences, right? She made a choice. Everyone makes choices. Everyone's going to go in together. What was it like if it was just Indara that went in, right? What if Torben didn't, like, what if all these things didn't happen, all the consequences that lead from it accordingly, right? So I feel like there's a degree where Anasaya is, I could see her doing that from a reason of she doesn't know the consequences and is just trying to feel out her enemy or potential threat to her children.
It struck me as more aggressive in that moment than her outward appearance is, and it didn't quite line up for me in terms of that character, but you know, felt a little bit perhaps like something that needed to happen in order for them all to be like, oh, this is spooky and she's doing spooky stuff.
I think I was somewhat surprised to see her in Torben's mind, like tormenting him versus one of the other witches.
Yes, that, in some ways that would have made more sense.
Yeah. So the Jedi go back, they have a meeting, they're going to test Osha and May. There's a lot of talk about like basically sending emails back and forth to the to the council and when to send emails and when to wait for stuff. We do basically see the like getting Osha and May tested, except we get May's perspective where she intentionally like fails the test in a conspicuous way, and they get their blood taken, and the M count is mentioned. M count seems to be the new.
That's the we Filoni, can say M count. Yeah, without,
it sounds better.
It sounds better. But they also they talk about the thing where it's like they're more than twins, basically at a genetic level, right?
So let's take a second there. I think two things there of interest, because I'd like to talk a little more about the symbionts and what that means, because there's I think some new terms thrown into us. One is the fact that I think we see this later too about when we first saw this, we saw Osha passing the test. I think this is the first time we saw Indara essentially not furious, but very frustrated at Sol because she thinks it was coaching, right? And not even just, I think this is the first time we see, we joke a lot about the Jedi just kidnapping children. But what we see here, or maybe retconning, is that Indara, the test isn't just a test of can you read the screen. The test is also do you want to come and join? And by essentially Saul giving a sales pitch, he's interfering in this. He's breaking the prime directive, actually, as one might say.
But he does ask for permission to do it in a different way. And what we saw in the first flashback was essentially he just tells her she's right even when she's lying about it. So, I mean, I don't think there's any... that part kind of feels like, okay, you're trying to get past this because we're aware that they're lying about it. But I agree that it seems to go past that. And he does have this weird neediness, I guess is the best way to describe it. About
attachment.
Attachment.
Yes.
Which does raise questions for me, as I mentioned earlier, about, well, Osha then gets drummed out and we don't really know the deal with that. And like, but he seems like he's so attached to her. So there's a question of, well, is there something about, is he involved in some way in the fact that she got brought back? I don't know. It raises it raises some questions for me.
Do we want to talk about the symbiont a little bit and what it means to be clones and twins? And
I mean,
and I feel like they specifically even say there's the idea that there's like one thing that's been split. And what the heck is that? Right?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what we definitely theorized about that in some of our earlier episodes, that because of the you know, we're one.
I guess
we're
I
two,
thought we would get
know,
an- Yeah, I thought we would get an answer, and we have not yet.
We did get the additional piece of information where Indara and May are talking, and May says that once they ascend, the two children are going to run the coven.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Indara's like, well, what does that mean? She's like, I don't know. We're just kids, right?
I liked that scene, actually. I liked the scene with Indara talking to May because I felt like she took a very... As someone who needs to talk to children sometimes...
Chooses to.
I felt like she did it in a way that was very like, you know, I'm going to talk to you and kind of, oh, can you explain this thing to me or whatever? Like, I felt that technique kind of, it rang true to me.
Yes.
As how you would interact with somebody of that age and trying to get information out of them without, like, I'm not interrogating you. I'm just trying to learn something here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah. Which is to say, Carrie Ann Moss, I think, does a really good job in this episode and in Dara in general, although she has some questions that we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah, but it raises more questions, too. Like, we're still waiting, for, and I don't know if we'll ever get answers of, like, why the coven is so... The coven needs these two girls to ascend. And yeah. It's unclear why.
Yep. Agreed.
Which is tricky or confusing because there's that thing has said, but then there's also, like... Also, Osha needs to make her own choices.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you need them to ascend or not? Or does it matter if she ascends and then goes off to live her own life? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I forget exactly the event. I think the Jedi are out doing stuff in the field, and Torben's extra salty about it. And then they get like an email or something?
They get the blood results.
They get the blood results back. And Torben, like, takes off, which is, like, you know, it's tricky. I feel like, we don't get to spend very much time with Kel Naka either. But Torben, we spent basically no time with. And it's just, like, I don't understand how he got into the Academy. Yeah. Right? Like, is he also the Chosen One?
Because,
like, he's exhibiting some Anakin-level behavior where he's like, I don't care what my master says. I'm getting on the speeder bike and I'm going.
You know what I like about this is it illustrates that in a world where there are tens of thousands of Jedi, some of them are going to be the worst.
Some of them are the worst. And yet, like, Osha's the one who gets kicked out.
Yeah, yeah, right. Questions. But no, I think I thought the one weak point of the story was like how quickly they're like, oh, they have these two different pieces of that they looked and they're like, oh, they're different and clones. It must be therefore two consciousness split in, or one to like, they make some conclusions very quick. And Torm's like, ah, this is the versions. Therefore, if I bring this home, they send me back to Coruscant. Like, that all seems to happen in less than 30 seconds. Like, yeah. Guys, this whoa, can we take a little time to process this? We just
also,
fly off.
Like, Saul goes off. I thought, like, oh, to stop him.
Yes.
And then it's like, actually, I'll scale this mountain with you.
Yeah, that's a weird choice. Things, as well. Then,
that's when the fire started. They knew. No, oh, they realized they were locked out. And Saul was like, oh, if they're locked out, they must be up to shenanigans.
Yeah, I
guess. Yeah, it felt like.
Why would you lock this door that I need to break into? Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think the going home thing for Torben is a weak motive. I would say that's.
I think it's a fine motive. I think it just... They don't explain
it. Wasn't played out.
The level at which it plays out does not make sense.
Okay, when you were in India with me, how excited were you to go home?
Not so excited that I would go and try to kidnap some children.
Yeah. Let me say, they didn't show him freaking out. They didn't have the place where Saul and Indara have like a conversation about they're worried about him and it would be good for him to get home soon. Hopefully they can wrap up the mission. It's like they're real blasé about the fact that he's apparently dangerously freaking out.
Well, and that's where potentially he may not have been that way, but I do wonder, and we don't know how much Anasaya's influence essentially like set off a time bomb there, such that like it makes the response more irrational to realize like, well, if you want to go back to Coruscant, like I will help you. It's possible that she sort of pushed him to some degree mentally,
I guess, but like pushed him into endangering her coven, you know?
Again, choices without understanding consequences.
Yeah, I think there's just a missing element. Something. It almost feels like something was cut around. Mm. Like,
yeah, it felt a little bit like they were working. Feeling. They were working backward from, you know, I feel like the set piece of this is we want everybody in that courtyard and we want everybody real mad and swinging weapons and yelling at each other. Yeah. And, you know, so and which is what happens, right? So the two Jedi are there and Torben gets his lightsaber out real fast. There's like a whole bridge full of witches with bows and arrows. And, you know, Anasaya does the thing which we are like, what is this going on? As she kind of like turns into black mist.
Wild.
And she gets stabbed by Saul. At that point, like I was like, we literally had all these witches with like bows pulled back. And but they're like real cool headed.
No, they start shooting. They do start shooting. And that's when Torben fights off with the lightsaber. Yeah.
I thought they were patient about waiting until they start shooting.
They start chewing. And that's then when the angry, the mad one. What's her name again?
Yeah.
Coral
then attacks. And I think that's actually the first time we see Saul show remorse. And I think he's like, oh, oh, this yeah. is not what I intended to do. I don't want to be here anymore.
Real bad.
Yeah.
There is going to do a lot of dodging and I'm not swinging around my white lightsaber around. Yeah.
There is a definite vibe from the way that Saul behaves. I don't know how strongly I want to drive this to like some of the conversations around policing, right? He basically makes a move that he feels like, oh, this person is quote unquote pulling a weapon when Anasaya starts to use her power.
She's operating right next to somebody.
Yeah, right. I need to just immediately grab my lightsaber and stab someone. It and is then realizing
very spooky looking.
That was not a thing that I should have done.
Well, yeah. It does raise the questions too of the Jedi and the Jedi Coders. Again, the question of they're the peacekeepers and like the justice of the. Like, again, this is where, again, I look forward to the movies they haven't made or the shows they haven't made. Like, again, what does Jedi JAG look like? What does the internal council look like? How often do people break the internal policies? And look, like, I mean, you see that a little bit with Barriss, but.
I do want to make one comment based on this, though, on the Saul killing Anasaya, that I think actually does cast a lot of light on the scene where he's going to kill Chimer and Osha stops him because he. I think in that moment, he remembers that he did this. And then in that moment, it may have been the right move to kill that guy. But because he realizes, oh my gosh, I killed this. I went too far and killed this unarmed woman all these years ago. It makes him hesitate in the moment when he does need to actually be like, this guy is a real threat and I need to end him.
Yeah. Instead, many
people
die.
While this is happening, like there's the kind of a weird shot where Kelnaka and Adara are like on a ship. And I was like, I don't really understand what you need to show that. And like Kelnaka gets like dropped off, I guess. And then Adara is going to go park and show up 5 minutes later, basically.
Well, in the cave underneath, right? That's where everyone parks their shuttles.
If your whole party isn't there, they can't be seated, Tony.
I think around this time, things start exploding, which was one of those things where we were, I feel like we said it like 5 or 6 times. Clearly, May started a fire, but not the fire.
Yeah.
No, apparently May started the fire.
I think they showed a little more this time, or maybe we caught it. Like, they do show what is the quote unquote kerosene fire connecting with the electrical conduits and starting an electrical fire.
Mine installation.
Yeah. Like, you could actually imagine me, I'm going off here of like, I've taken 5 hours of OSHA training. Let's be very clear.
Not May and OSHA training.
No, like legit OSHA training. And which may not be a thing, thanks to our Supreme Court. Anyways, so but the like maybe some I could see a thing of like it's in the electricals, whatever.
All technical terms. Yep, all technical terms.
Electricity. Something going off there of its old equipment. Sure. Like, okay, it wasn't the rocks burning. It's all the wiring.
Yeah, that's fine.
Check your wiring.
That did not bother me. I think there is the larger question of the thing which comes directly after this,
which is
so we see Kelnaka get possessed by all the witches.
Yep.
By basically a whole group of them chanting and swaying together in unison.
Very it's a creepy.
Cool shot.
Great shot.
Very creepy.
Yeah.
Especially with the one in the front who looks like she's the same alien species as Maz, perhaps?
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, poor Kelnaka, who doesn't get to do anything in this show.
Just cook and look for metal.
Kill some smugglers outside his hut, and then be dead when they show up, is possessed. I don't know. I mean, this felt more like we need a fight scene between Jedi, and the only way to do that is to possess one of our Jedi. And I guess Kelnaka is, like, real fearsome because Saul and Torben are having a hard time with him. And
yeah.
Torben's...
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
And, you know, Torben's face gets cut up with Wookiee claw scars. And then Indara shows up, and it turns out even that is not, you know, like immediately gonna flip a switch, and she does something.
What does she do?
The witches drop dead, unconscious. Maybe it doesn't matter, because if you're unconscious in a building that's about to explode, the difference between being dead and being unconscious is
so my
timing.
Theory here is essentially drawing from the TV show Avatar.
Okay. Which is canon in the Star Wars universe.
No, which is canon.
Although I will say Dave Filoni worked on Avatar, so I'm going to allow it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, yep. Arbiter. But essentially, and they talk about
you're talking about James Cameron's Avatar, right?
Yes. Naturally.
Where you possess kind of an alien body with a... Okay. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Bring it all together.
Yep. So when... Yep. When Aang goes into his like avatar form, which is like the giant blue creature, right? And he's encountering and gaining.
When he
like,
creates an avatar of himself, yes.
But there's a special form that he goes into.
Avatar state.
Avatar state, thank you. Which is, I think, what I just said. If he gets killed when he's in that state, the avatar is permanently killed, right? And all present and past avatars, like the reincarnation cycle ends.
Yes.
And I kind of wanted the same thing by opening yourselves up to this power. Essentially, puts yourself in a more vulnerable state. And then, like, if you're killed or damaged in that world, you instantly die, right? And then, like, in some ways, it's more risky and vulnerable. And it reminded me, of like, she didn't do anything unique, but because essentially, or think of it like when you had a computer and you put in a USB drive, if you do not properly eject the USB drive, it corrupts the data. Right?
Yes.
You do have to eject the witches before you...
Yes, exactly. Yes, yeah. They are all corrupted now.
I just pull that out.
So I saw this suggested in the Incomparable Member Discord, and I think there's some truth to it, which is it's possible that this explains Kelnaka's fixation on the symbols. Mm. Is that there's some residue in
they're like
him.
Stuck in his head.
Well, I think I think that kind of, you know, bears out what you're saying, which is it's like if they're projecting their consciousness into his head and that connection is severed, then their bodies are dead, but their minds are still possessed potentially. However, none of that is explained is the problem. Like, it's perfectly fine as headcanon and like,
I guess it's like, I could believe that there is a rationale for it. I don't necessarily need to know the rationale other than the fact that Indara just killed 30 people.
Well, that is why it's important, though. That's why it's important that we know whether or not they're dead.
I think the question is, I don't think it's important to know how it happened. I think the question of, going to intend to kill 30 people. The question is, did she know she was going to kill them?
I think the problem is without knowing what the in-world world-building mechanism for that is, we don't know what she knows and doesn't know.
Yeah, I want to know what was going on in Kelnaka's mind, right? Because the same way his eyes are the black and the possessed means that he was also having a conversation potentially with 30 different witches.
30 witches standing around as a Wookiee roars at them unintelligibly.
I mean,
They also said Triwook.
And, you know, there's a lot in this episode. There's a lot of places where it moved fast. I guess there was, like, a couple places where I wish there had been, like, I wish, like, Saul and Indara had a little conversation, even if it was a little forced for the sake of the audience. Because, like, I could have imagined back, because they have a conversation when they're on the ship on the way back, where he says, you know, he could have said, did you know that was going to kill all of them? And, you know... She could have said, I didn't know that, or I made my choice.
What does it matter?
They need a little bits here and there. I think, some screw tightening, some smoothing out.
We see the Mei and Osha scene where they're on the bridges from more of Saul's perspective. And we see that, like, he literally, not just a choice about who to catch, but which bridge to, like, keep saving.
I actually liked that as a scene because it made much more sense about both his whatever guilt he's holding on to and the fact that it is an impossible choice there. Like, he is in a situation where it's like, I can't save them both. Maybe I can save one of them and I have to choose. And it's like, this is a terrible choice to be in. It's a terrible position to be in. That's good pathos. That's good drama of having to have him carry that. I think in some ways, adding everything else on top of that is maybe too much, and I enjoy the simplicity of that stark moment where he has to make a decision, and that decision he has to live with for the rest of his life. I think some of the rest of it muddies the waters around that moment being sort of, is that the key moment, or is the key moment when he kills Anasea, or whatever? Like, there's potentially a little too much going on.
I like, you know, they go from that to they're on the ship and, you know, Indara's like, we're just going to, like, the cover-up starts now, right? Like, you know, I mean, I felt like we kind of saw that coming and it kind of, it feels consistent with the kind of sad, dejected lives that they have inserted themselves into.
Even for Indara there, I think her point is well made, that if they go in with the full truth of what happened, then, you know, Osha will, you know, be thrown out of the, she won't be allowed into into the order and anything. And like,
but
from
she
her
left
perspective,
anyways. Yeah. Knowing what we know now, would it have been better? Now,
yes. Agreed. For sure. But like in that moment, I can see why Indara, even though that is a flawed choice, I am totally fine with characters making flawed choices. I don't think that's a, I think she makes a reasonable decision that is maybe not the right decision, but like from the perspective where she is at that point and what the best she can salvage from this, it may be the right decision for her in the moment.
It's rough seeing it from the Jedi, who are supposed to be, you know, lawful good, boring people.
Paragons,
And it's like they cut a lot of corners and literally basically engage in a cover up of mass murder. You know, that's pretty bad.
Despite direct instructions not to engage.
Yeah. But they are,
and like, for lack of a better term, doesn't kicked human. Out. You know?
He like, self-exiles, which is like not entirely what that should have happened there, right?
And
he kills himself.
I do want to go back looking at their which now that now makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, and looking back the words, like, so what did they all say? So Tormund said we didn't know.
I don't remember what he
said. And I think Carrie Ann Moss just said, I forget what she said. We have to go back and look at the dialogue, what they said. I think one of the things that also, just sort of a weird, I was thinking about going this, an interesting moment. When, so again, phenomenal acting by the young women, the girls, especially the woman who plays May. When May is going to, first of all, I think we should talk a little bit the fact that Coral basically tells May to be angry and prevent this from happening. Yeah, and like, what degree did she instigate this? But so May goes off, burns Osha's sketchbook, starts the fire, and again, you can see the moment instantly when she becomes a little girl again and just wants her mama's help and runs for her mama. It was just like such a beautiful moment. But did I remember this correctly or do I remember wrong? When she runs out into the courtyard to ask Anasaya for help, does Saul call her Osha?
Yes.
Yes.
Which is super interesting that he has such a connection to Osha and still mixes them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
I
think speaks to them bearing sort of that same force trace.
And what, I struggle a little bit with Saul in this episode because I don't necessarily understand what is it about this person who feels like, because we get this, so the sort of plot data points we get are, we get the first bit where Indara's giving him kind of, you know, like a friendly nudge, but like, this is why you don't have a Padawan yet, you're not ready for this. And then he's like, oh, no, I got a Padawan. I mean, a Padawan, the next person I see is going to be my Padawan. Yeah. this girl here is going to be my Padawan. And then he's really, like, way too into it, and then yet he still doesn't know. Like we said, she mistakes her. It's just a weird...
Can I give you a weird force theory?
Yeah, sure.
So going with the other shoes still dropped that we haven't understood is the connection between Saul and the stranger.
Chimer.
And does Chimer have a weird connection? Does something about his past and background mean that like something about Osha and May like vibrates in the force in a very specific way that's almost like addictive for him? Because like he does act irrationally in some ways.
Yeah, very irrationally. Mm-hmm. And again...
And in fact, you could say all the Jedi end up acting irrational in this episode, and I guess it's like, maybe the force is vibrating, and so they're all doing, the virgins is making them all act drunk.
We're the Star Trek episode, like the virgins makes everyone act weird.
So if we didn't, we mentioned we sort of put a pin in the virgins thing, but the one place that it does come up in the previous Star Wars franchises is in Phantom Menace. Qui-Gon says he encountered a virgins in the force in the form of a child, which is said to be sort of unusual. They expect it to be a place rather than a being. This episode never clarifies if the virgins is the tree, the witches doing something, the twins, the pit. Like, we don't know. We never find out whether or if there's virgins. Even the twins are only used as like evidence that a virgins exists.
Yeah.
But not necessarily the virgins itself. It is tacitly confirmed, I believe, that Anasaya created them, essentially, We still don't know
how or why the Jedi would support
any of these things. And then it is weird to go also from this episode and think to yourself, what is the point of the Stranger of Chimer in all of this? This actually seems like a totally separate storyline that he has just swooped in to like take advantage of, basically.
Yeah.
But this is the main thrust of this show, is a terrible thing happened 16 years ago on this planet, and its consequences are still rippling throughout all those people's lives. Yes. And I think that is in and of itself an interesting story. I have some quibbles about maybe the execution of this throughout the season. I saw some people talking about maybe this should have been, the flashback should have been one episode or more delineated. I'm not sure that's wrong. Like, part of me wonders if they had held some of the flashback stuff to the end and we had seen the whole flashback at episode 7, like, whether there would have been more tension and drama about that as we unfold. Like, why are all these people getting murdered? What happened on this planet years ago? But we kind of already knew part of it, like, a third of the way through, and the remainder is not so earth-shattering. Like, there's some bad stuff in there for sure, but we all kind of knew at that, like, already going in, like, okay, they did some bad stuff. And the stuff they did clarify, they didn't clarify enough. We saw the dead bodies of the coven in episode 3. And at the end, we're still like, I still don't know what really killed them.
I was thinking, like, I kind of want to, if I were watching this again, I'd kind of actually want to watch this episode after watching What's a Destiny. And would it, how the next episodes would play out. I think, again, I would probably then trust Saul even less.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would find the Osha and May relationship even more tragic that they can't reunite. And then I think I would be even more like, what is Chimer's deal? I think it would actually be kind of interesting if they had done that instead.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that one of the things I do like out of this is this idea that this thing that happened was so scarring to everybody that, like, Saul goes into teaching, Kelnaka goes in the woods, Torben takes a vow of silence, like,
and Endara just off hangs out in a bar.
Like, I kind of feel like they do all, I think that the sort of depiction of this thing that was traumatic and all the people are still themselves, because going back to the first scene with Endara fighting May, she realizes what's going on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think, 100%. You know, the fact, like, all right, she recognizes May. She knows what this is about. She's like, oh, yeah, this was going to come around sooner or later. Like, this is destiny.
This is a force, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the fact that she, I think, even more clearly sacrifices herself in that scene to save somebody else and be like, you know what? I kind of deserve this.
And then it's interesting, too, that May then does not kill the parent and the child, which, again, has even more significance, the bartender. I think the big question I have coming out of this also is, does the Green Lady know what happened?
I think that's a good question. I think she knows more than maybe the rest of the council. Yeah. I get the feeling that maybe Saul or somebody confided in her and was like, and she's like, you got to keep a lid on this thing. Like, I'll help you maybe keep a lid on it. But it's unclear. We don't really know. And I struggle with that, too. I do feel like that's an interesting question. And
it feels like there's so many things to untangle in one episode.
Yeah, and Leslie Headland has said that she, like, kind of felt like she left it all in the... Like, there's stuff that could be explored in a second season, but she kind of felt like she was going to leave it all on the table for season one. And
okay.
I don't necessarily feel like...
Yeah.
That last episode, by the way, I think that the runtime is out there, and it ain't an hour, okay? It's more like the same length as the last couple episodes.
Okay.
Anyway, so my general feeling on this episode was it just kind of, I wanted a little bit more, a little tighter.
My expectations, there was a lot riding on this one, so it was going to be hard to get where I needed it to.
There's good stuff in there, but it's uneven.
It's hard to, I feel like there's so much stuff that's just happening, or even, you know, especially like the parts where it's like, Saul's watching the episode we've seen before, is kind of like, I don't know. I didn't get a lot from it compared to previous episodes, I guess.
I thought that the most effective scene in there was the scene where he kills Anasea, because it was legit shocking. Didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. And really was like, it was horrifying. And like, but that worked because it was so viscerally like, oh my God, I can't believe he just killed her.
I think too, because we were trying to hypothesize right after we watched that, was sort of like, what was she doing and why was she doing? And the theory was that she was essentially trying to teleport to go save her child, which is like,
if she had just walked backwards slowly.
Yeah. I'm no threat.
With her hands on her head, you know?
I I generally, I agree. Again, like, I think is the big that everything you know is wrong from a just different point of view. Again, I don't think it really works like that. I think there's a couple points with Rush and I just want to know more. But as a story about people who make very bad choices and there are horrible consequences of that that do ripple through time and history, I think it worked for that. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that there's nothing redeeming for any character in this, with the exception perhaps of Anaseo, who still makes mistakes, right? Every character makes a bad decision in this.
Except maybe Osha, honestly. She's kind of the...
Just a kid.
She's, I mean, yeah, May starts a fire, right? Even though she regrets it and like whatever. Yeah, Osha is just kind of... Yeah, she doesn't know anything that's going on in all of this.
I agree. I think Osha, but Osha still makes... She's following what she thinks in her best interest. Like, but if Osha didn't want to be a Jedi, she makes the most choices that don't have any sort of like direct malevolence or impact, but still, she's making clear choices of following what she thinks is the best plan for herself.
Conspiracy theory or question?
Conspiracy question.
Conspiracy question. Do you think there's any chance that this season ends, or perhaps some future version of this show involves a plot in which May and Osha merge?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. I thought that we were going.
Yeah.
I don't know, because what I think interesting about that is how hard Osha tries not, she wants to have her own life is such a thread that like she keeps hitting.
Yeah.
And what would it take? Is it something as like, I find out Saul killed my mom and that is enough to push me over? And then again, how do you get Chimera into there? Yeah. Chimera wants the power of two, a thing that has something to do with the ascension.
There's an awesome pop song with lyrics in the credits.
So
in the credits, which is, you know, I mean, it's fun, but also it does not contain the answers to the questions here.
Or unless it does, do we really unpack the lyrics?
No,
I did not listen closely. Yeah.
So it's good. I liked it. Again, I'm overall still really liking. I am pleasantly surprised
watching
this show. I like the show.
You know,
I'm just enjoying the show. I'm not being like, what is going on? It's nice. It's a very watchable show.
I think I am down on this episode compared to the other episodes. Not as in not down on like, you know, this is no good so much as like, no, this was not my favorite episode of The Acolyte.
Yeah, I agree.
So
there's individual moments I really like in there, but I think it's a whole for me. It's a little, little more.
I feel like this show, standard statement, aside from Andor, is perhaps the most ambitious Star Wars live action show. Yeah. And in part, they've set it in a different time. They're not parading out characters that you've seen before. They're doing the degree of difficulty, as Jen Syracuse would say, that they're setting themselves up for is very high. This is trying to tell a lot of things in Star Wars, but so far away from the things that you are used to in terms of characters, places, maybe even a little bit with themes. What they're playing with in the Star Wars world here is exciting, and I guess I give them big points for doing that.
Yeah,
compared to some of our other live action Star Wars shows, and you know, maybe you don't always stick the landing when you make big swings, and those are both sports, right? Is that Dan?
Yeah,
that's how it works. You take a big swing at the ball, and then you have to land properly.
Yeah, no, otherwise, totally. Simone Biles is amazing at baseball. I
bet she's pretty good.
I bet she's phenomenal. I think she's amazing at everything she does. I think you actually raise a great...
She listens, and she's glad to hear that.
She's a huge fan. Simone, we're a huge fan.
She does not watch The Acolyte, but she's one of those people.
Yeah, she's one of the people. She writes it. She actually loved Remington Steele, too. She's written to let us know that. I think you actually bring a great point, Tony. I think in the years past, and like when we think about this show, I'm not going to remember necessarily the plot, but I'm going to remember the characters and the planets. And I think one thing they've done, and we talked about this in the very beginning, one thing they've done extraordinarily well is like even these minor characters, like the two Padawans. I mean, Jackie was amazing, but then also Saul's other Padawan, who interesting. I was thinking Saul's had a Padawan twice. Like, there's a lot to unpack here as we think about it. But like, it was Yord's Padawan we met briefly. They're memorable characters. Like, they're all very good, fully fleshed, memorable characters. They've done a very good job with that. Mm-hmm. I do wish that someone would cut the Saul running around the castle, the witch castle. and basically like head popping
which
up.
Castle?
Which castle? Literally felt like it was like could have been which what castle? Why castle? I felt a little bit like it could be like cut to Benny Hill of just running around and getting up to hijinks in the background. Yeah.
I thought it was like Back to the Future Part 2 where Marty's crawling around in the in the background of the first movie.
Yeah.
All right. We do have a lot of mail. We should probably jump to that. I'm going to start off with some stuff from Mastodon, where you can find us at acp@zeppelin.flights. Please send in your thoughts, your questions. Brian wrote in regards to last week's episode, episode 6. This entire episode was a tease. Do they have enough episodes to burn one? That may be a slightly contentious statement about last week's episode, although I do think there was probably a lot of table setting in there that we haven't seen pay off yet. So I think that's the question of maybe, but is it, if you're teeing stuff up, I think that's fine. You got to pay it off.
Yeah.
And I think we all agreed last week that the OSHA Chimer plot was more interesting than the May Saul plot, because the May Saul plot felt like it was missing some wheels or something.
How many wheels should it have, Dan? Dan, you're a writer. How many wheels does a plot need?
At least 7.
Yeah, in some ways, I wonder if they had actually done the flashback beforehand, could you have then spent more time on the planet with May, on the spaceship with May and Saul talking to each? I don't know. You potentially actually could have turned that into a really interesting conversation if you had done that first.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyways.
Matt wrote in to say, wow, I love the whip fan theory.
Yeah. Really good theory.
Still haven't seen play off, which is the theory that Vernestra was Chimer's Jedi Master. We may find out next week. That feels like a weird thing to hold over.
Yeah.
Ryan wrote in with Acolyte spoiler / speculation. Another theory about who the stranger is. He looks a lot like the Knights of Ren, and they played Kylo Ren's theme in his reveal episode, which I do think we mentioned briefly. Rey Plagueis, the planet they're on, is apparently very much like the description of where the Plagueis stuff happens in the EU, including the Cortosis mine, which is another theory that's been floating around.
I was wrong that it is not Octo for sure. I think the showrunner or producer said it was not.
But that feels also like a thing that they might put in there as a little bit of a red herring for the fans. It's unclear. Rey Vernestra, probably not the Sith Master, but clearly she's the one who gave the stranger his scar with the fancy light whip, which is, again, another thing that we discussed. The ADHDM wrote in to say, inspired by your comparisons to Batman, I looked up the Latin for bat, vespertilio. I think Darth Vesper makes a great Sith name. As to what my outfit would look like, I really just want May's sweet cloak. I tried to draw a helmet, but I'm not much of an artist, so imagine this, but you know, scary. Regarding the way Chimer moves, Manny Jacinto, like Summer Glau and Tom Holland, was a dancer before he was an actor and chose his performance. This was their creepy Sith helmet that they made.
That's
which I think is pretty great. Yeah. Darth Vesper is a good name, too, I will say. I do like that.
No, I think, and spot on about the dance, and I think just general, like, very aware body movement.
A lot of dancers do very well in fight choreography for obvious reasons, right? Fight choreography is probably closer to dancing than fighting.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, never fight a dancer. Just don't. It's rude.
Well, which is another good example of, like, the Yord scene from the Stranger episode, where it's like if you taught a bunch of people how to do fight choreography or stage fighting, and then you throw them in with somebody who's like, I just have a freaking sword and I'm murdering people, you're not going to last long.
We were only taught the art of lightsaber dance fighting. We don't know how to do lightsaber fighting.
I'm just now thinking of going back to gymnastics again, everyone's floor routine, and just envisioning Jedi doing that in like their Jedi cloaks. It's great, especially the
Jedi ribbon dancing. You know,
Yord was huge so in Coruscant.
Light ribbons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paul writes in to say, per Kat's request, my take on what Basil was up to.
Yes.
Powered up Pip offered to reveal May to Saul in the only way he could, by annoying her with Basil's help so much that she rebooted Pip. So what? So because she rebooted Pip in evil mode, which, as we all know from Lower Decks, makes his lights turn red, an obvious giveaway to Saul, knowing that OSHA would never do that to Pip, and they really did switch to red. Thoughts?
What is the name? It was like Bumblebee butternut squash from Lower Decks.
Oh, you're thinking of Peanut Hamper.
Yes.
Peanut Hamper. Yeah.
You picked the other. His cousin is Bumblebee butternut squash. The next most
is it from Transformers?
Pleasing sounds. Well, that's his, you know. Dan, there's not all bumblebees are Transformers. Not, Dan, you shouldn't assume all robots that are named Bumblebee are Autobots. That's very offensive.
Or all bumblebees are Autobots either. We need them to pollinate the backyard.
Okay.
Well.
Good theory. It's possible. Yeah. We'll see if that pays off next episode as well.
I want to believe that Pip's not evil. That Pip's okay.
It's dangerous. They you know, this is set 100 years ago when there was just a little switch on the back of all droids that was like evil, not evil.
Yeah.
And it's like, and it was not, it's not, it's like a real easy to bump switch, you know.
Yeah, you know,
they fixed that by the time C-3PO was put together.
Yeah, but not by the time Chopper, because his switch is stuck in
hard-wired.
Evil.
Hardwired.
Vintage. Yeah, you know. Yeah, Chopper went in and rewired his own thing, so the switch is still there, but it doesn't do anything.
It's like, flip that all day.
We have a shop vac, and it's a little orange. We've named it Chopper, and like,
yeah,
he's a little, you know, homicidal maniac, but like, he's really powerful and good at what he does. Yeah, it's a great chopper.
Dust. Yep. Alex writes in, and I believe this is in reference to our show, not The Acolyte. This week's episode definitely did not disappoint on the gratuitous and very welcome chaos, Cat.
I
don't even remember what we did last week. This is blown out.
Yeah,
of my head.
Usually I block most of this out. So.
All right, we have some emails.
Thank you, by the way. Yes, I am here for the chaos as well.
Emails, which of course are at acp@theincomparable.com. Where to start? We had several emails this week. Let's start with Will, who
Murder, She Wrote.
His subject line is asterisk two geeks, which... times two geeks, I guess. Oh no, there may be a reference to this later on. Just wanted to send some love to y'all. I'm enjoying the show like always. Last episode you mentioned during theory time T2 Terminator Judgment Day, but missed D2 the Mighty Ducks and K2 the Big Ass Mountain, or board game based on the same.
No, K2 was a terrifying movie. I saw that.
All are great.
Is that Widowmaker? Is that what K2 is?
No, that's K19.
K19, sorry.
Which is not K9.
K2 has probably made some widows. So.
Yeah, K2 is, I think, one of the deadliest mountains
yes,
in the world.
I think so.
Okay.
It's like one of the last mountains they climbed, where it's the second tallest mountain, I believe, in
everyone
the Himalayas.
Everyone climbed K1 and was like, it's fine. And then K2 is...
Is K1 really? Kilimanjaro or
not? No, there is a whole thing with the naming scheme. I forget what it is. I look this up now and again. Like, every few years I look up K2 just because, like, that movie made such just, an... No, the movie made such an adult impression
on it. Just to see what he's up to. Quick scroll down to the, you know, like, recent, like, controversy section. Yeah.
I think came out, like, 94, this is perhaps?
Cat, real normal behavior. No one's questioning you.
No, I remember it came out, we did, we rented it, and I watched with my parents.
1991?
Oh, it came out in 91? Yeah, so I was 6 when I saw that, and I still think about that movie.
Is this one of those movies where people have to eat each other?
No, but they have to climb up.
I think that might be a lie. To be fair, do they have to climb up? What if they just didn't climb up the deadly mountain?
Yeah. Okay. But they basically, several people die, and then... some people survive and they risk everything to save some of their friends, but like there's a whole big question of, like, why are there, it's
I think
two survivors.
Everything
basically
is explained by the fact that this movie is the headline star of this movie is Michael Biehn, who is really only known otherwise, I mean, unless you watch that short-lived Magnificent Seven TV show in which he stars as Kyle Reese from Terminator, the original Terminator movie. Michael Biehn, not a guy that you're like, oh yeah, household name. So maybe this movie, the other person is Matt Craven, who is not to be confused with either Wes Craven or
Craven the Hunter.
Ray Craven the Hunter.
Who's
or
Craven the Hunter?
Matt Frewer. Don't confuse him with Matt Frewer either. Very different.
Does he look like Matt Frewer? Is why that way?
Well, honestly, I don't know. No, I just say that's kind of a
similar. That either sounds like a vampire wannabe or like a wrestler.
Kat. Craven the Hunter is one of Spider-Man's lesser villains. He's coming out. He's getting his own
Spider-Man villain. Don't care. Well, you're gonna want to know because I've definitely seen this guy.
He has a great fashion sense, which is he's got a vest made from like the face of a lion, which seems real hard to do. All right, to make
I'm gonna Google this right now. But as I pull up my my Google, the last thing I Googled for was cockatiel Final Fantasy Victory, which is what you all should Google. Apparently, as Tony was telling us before we started the show, there's a cockatiel out there who just sings the Final Fantasy Victory song.
By the way, the K2 is adapted from a stage play and loosely based on the story of the first Americans to summit K2.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, again, okay. I look at this article like every 2-3 years. Again, it was a really impactful movie on me. That and Birds, that one too.
The Birds?
What? Did your parents make any, like, what didn't they show you?
I was not allowed to watch Born on the 4th of July. We started and then I was sent to my room. I was not allowed to finish that movie with them.
What did they think Born on the 4th of July was going to be about? Because it's about the Vietnam War, right?
Kraven the Hunter looks ridiculous.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, well, first off, comic books. But it's important to know.
It looks like he has beautiful blonde flowing locks and a loincloth.
Also, is that the...
does he have... I do want the vest that looks like the face of a lion.
The vest that's made from a lion's face.
No, it looks awesome. That I would actually wear.
The best version, the canonically best version of Kraven the Hunter, we can all agree, is the version that appears in the Squirrel Girl comics.
Yes, that is true. Kraven, you're going to be very disappointed.
They're making a movie about him.
Oh, yeah, they are.
A whole movie. There's trailers.
It looks real bad.
It almost comes out on my birthday. What is his backstory?
It's part of Sony's plan to mine all elements of the Spider-Man continuity until people rebel. I don't know.
This is the headline.
Just to be clear, Kat. They made the Morbius movie first, and then they're like, "All right, what's further down in that pile?" Kraven the Hunter.
Every year, now and again, I just giggle about Morbius. So, what is Kraven the Hunter's backstory? Born to Russian aristocrats and abusive father, Sergei Kravinov survives.
You're not telling me anything.
Become a maniacal big game hunter in Africa. Why is that the natural progression of surviving? Essentially, being a Russian.
Do you want to know?
No. Yeah. After imbibing a potion, enhances his physical prowess. As Kraven the Hunter, he finds pleasure in hunting Spider-Man. Why was Kraven the Hunter delayed? Oh, there was a strike. That's why.
I want to be clear. We are only halfway through Will's email.
And Will did ask about Kraven the Hunter, didn't he? He did not.
I was just checking the notes here. Sorry, Will.
Kraven the Hunter, notable for having the first name of the last name of the guy who appeared in K2. Please continue, Dan and Will.
All are great.
See, I just want to say, I can follow the thread. It doesn't help. It does not help.
I'm really worried about
having
the migration because
of things backward
So we had T2.
I'm worried about this.
Widowmaker.
I'm worried about this going backwards because the next bit is about D2 being his favorite. And I'm like, worried we're going to go down a digression about the Mighty Ducks now.
I haven't seen D2 in ages. Nope, just remember D1.
Nope, just keep moving. Definitely.
Which is the one where they go to school? Is that D2 or D3?
Don't they go to school?
They should go to school in all the movies. They're children. That would be abuse.
No. They go to like a prep school together, and they're like
they do that.
I just remember in the trailer, like their clothes get with the liquid nitrogen. That's D2.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What was D3 then?
We have several other emails.
D3, they go to the Junior Olympics. Have I seen any of these movies in 25 years? No, but I can tell you the premise.
Yes, this is literally in the email. It says definitely getting a rewatch to prep for Olympic season, even though it's the World Juniors instead. Thanks for the show, listener Will in Tennessee. P.S. Like 4 episodes after Dan said, "May the Force be with you" as a sign-off, Kat said, "Always," and I think that should be the official sign-off. Fun fact, if you go back and turn your volume up, she says it about half the time. P.P.S. Excited for next Dan book later this year. Hey, me too. P.P.P.S. Need Kat in some more TPK.
Yeah.
Kat has only appeared once in TPK?
Yeah, the sheep episode.
As a sheep.
Is that the only time?
I think so.
Tried to convince her to do more, but she thinks we're jerks.
Well, no, I'm now unemployed, so I can now do podcasting every night.
Next one. Eldon writes in, "Hello, nerds. Just finished listening to your episode discussing The Acolyte Episode 6, and I had a few thoughts I wanted to share. I'll mention I haven't watched Episode 7 yet, so I'm sure somewhere all these will get refuted at some point when I watch. One, Dan asked if Darth Plagueis was ever confirmed to be a guy, and you all looked at some of the art, I believe. In Palpatine's memeable speech, he constantly uses the pronoun he, his, to refer to Plagueis, since it's implied that Plagueis was Palpatine's master. I think it makes clear he was dude. seem to remember a brief reference to Darth Bane in one of the Clone Wars episodes of the Sith Temple or something, and 100 years before Yavin might be a little early for Plagueis. I'm not doing that math. So I wonder if they'll turn Chimaer into Darth Bane. I know literally nothing about Darth Bane, so maybe that's totally crazy sauce, but it feels more fun because it's less related to the prequels. B, briefly on the Darth Spooky Helmet. I think I remember Chimaer explicitly mentioned to Osha it was like the training helmets they used in the Jedi Temple, forcing you to reach out with your senses, if you'll pardon the pun. Also reminds me of a dark version of Chirrut from Rogue One.
Mm.
Three, we've gone from B to three. Roman numeral three, to be clear. My initial thought, a Chimaer scar was it looked like it came from Force Lightning, but Chekhov sure suggests it was the whip. I guess economy of characters makes sense that Chimaer would be Vernestra's Padawan, but if it is a whip scar, I wonder if they just had just fought before.
Mm.
Vernestra hushed it up because she thought he was dead, and now he's come back for revenge, a less intimate relationship than Padawan Master. Four, cue rambling rant. I'm getting less and less certain we'll go back to Brendok, or at least it'll be shown on screen. There's definitely something that happened there that Saul will tell us about, but overall I have my doubts about what will get answered in the show. I've liked it so far because it kept asking questions, but I wonder if two episodes is enough time to get all the answers. I'm reminded of walking out of theaters after seeing The Last Jedi and thinking that while it had its problems, I liked it overall and wouldn't mind if the next movie could wrap everything up nicely, which it didn't.
Yeah.
Hopefully keeping the same direction throughout will avoid that problem, but I must admit there have been a few other times I question if this could have used just one more draft. For example, Maze's motivation seemed to change rapidly at the convenience of the plot on Kofar. I think the writers wanted their parent trap, and I'm not sure it totally worked for me. All in all, though, I'm interested in seeing where the show goes and invested in seeing it to the end. I think it explores some interesting ideas about the Jedi in a way the prequels tried and failed to do, questions fleshed out in the Clone Wars or Tales of the Jedi. I look forward to your discussion next week.
We do, too. Yeah, I think Quicker is a fair number of those.
Yeah, no, I think that's all pretty good. I like the helmet catches on Chirrut and the sort of the training helmets. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
we're still waiting on the Sith stuff.
Yeah. Before we read the next one, Tony, do you want to issue a correction?
Correction. I flip flop the plots of Mighty Ducks 2 versus Mighty Ducks 3. The end.
Boy.
Avoid that listener mail.
Yeah. Yeah. They win the Goodwill games before they go to prep school. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. Naturally.
Mm-hmm. I apologize if I mispronounce your name. Zavin or Zvan writes, hi nerds. Quick thoughts on your episode 87 for Dan. Yes, three A's is too many for a name. I have three A's and it confuses everyone. Only my mom pronounces all three when she says it. For Kat, kitchen Sharpies are absolutely amazing.
Yes, thank you.
For Tony, insert chaos moment here. Plus, not all books are good. Agree.
Yeah.
Theory Z1, Chimaer is not Sith. He found an old Sith holocron and compared it to his Jedi training and said, I'll do it all.
Oh, so he's like he's a Force completionist. He wants all,
he's like
all
a
parts
Soka,
of the Force.
But a little early in the journey. Also, going back to the previous one, just to say, like, the Darth Plagueis and the he, him pronouns, I'm like, yes, just to put the pin in, it could, we know pronouns are somewhat flexible, are flexible. I don't think Star Wars is going to do that, though. But we still might get Darth Plagueis. I don't know.
Neil writes in, hi, ACP crew, some observations about the last couple of Acolyte episodes. I just rewatched episode 6 with my daughter, who missed it when it first dropped last week. On the rewatch, I'm now convinced that Saul realized almost immediately that it's May on the ship with him, and he's stringing her along for a while to see what she's up to.
Mm.
I suspected on the first watch, but I'm convinced on the second viewing. In Saul's very first scene of the episode, after failing to connect with Coruscant, he angrily leaves the cockpit to reset the comm system. While at the console in the other room, we see him go through a whole range of emotions. He starts angry, banging on the console, then his face changes as he tries to center himself. He activates the console, we see his expression change again. At this point, he is now calm and in control. He looks off to the side, and I believe this is the moment when Saul realizes it's May who's with him on the ship.
Hmm.
I have to give Lee Jung-jae a huge amount of credit for his acting in that scene. The range of emotions that play out on his face sells it for me. As for this week's episode 7,
I like that theory. I like that theory a lot.
We commented on that particular scene before, too, that there's something going on there. As for this week's episode 7, I have some spoilery, if you haven't watched yet, Conspiracy Corner observations. I think Mother Coral survived and is the one who rescued May. I kind of agree with this. Her body is not shown at all after she magically teleports away. It's not in the room with the dead witches who were controlling Kelnaka, nor is it outside with Mother Anasea's body. I went back and rewatched the episode, end of episode 3 also, and Coral's body is nowhere to be seen. I think this ties into Saul's tragic mistake in killing Anasea too. In that earlier scene, Coral and Torbin are squared off and ready to fight, but everyone's at a standoff until the explosions are heard in the background. At that point, Coral and Torbin move to engage, and Anasea starts to use her magic and begins dematerializing, and so does May. Also true. I think Anasea was about to teleport herself and Mei inside the fortress to find Osha, but Saul mistakes it for the start of magical attack and ignites his lightsaber and kills Anasea. Coral uses the same body movement and special effect when she disappears as Anasea's magic. This all adds up to me for the classic trope, if you don't see the body, they aren't dead. How any of this leads to Mei joining up with Darth Bortles, I have no idea. I hope we get some of those answers in the season finale, but I also hope they
so many questions to answer.
Yeah. Some threads hanging, and Chimera Mendoza survives to a second season. A final point, though unrelated to the Acolyte, the hero, quote-unquote, ship, and some character names for the upcoming Skeleton Crew series were revealed last week by way of a LEGO Star Wars leak. Google LEGO Onyx Cinder for details, which I have seen some of those. Anyways, sorry for another super long email. Looking forward to the pod and the season finale of The Acolyte. Keep up the good work. That was from Neil.
Yeah, I could believe that she is alive.
I meant to mention something about Coral because, yeah, we don't see her again. And
mm-hmm.
that does make sense
mm-hmm.
with Mei.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that tied in with Chimera somehow, too.
Well, it also gives them then a path to, if there is any sort of witchery shenanigans that need to happen and they need part of the coven still alive to make it happen. To be honest, when we first saw Anasea disintegrating, I thought she was actually... I thought there's going to be something, again, going back to Star Trek, something a bit like the... what are they called? What is Dax?
Trill?
Trill. Something Trill of where like her consciousness is going to live on in the younger girls. I thought that's essentially what she was doing, but no, she's clearly teleporting, as we learned later. But
yeah. And the reason for that, I think we talked about... Tony and I talked about last night a little bit was... In the Jedi games, there's a character named Marin who is a Night Sister, and she does have the ability to teleport. The effect is not quite the same, like the way it looks, but that is a known power of some of the other people with the Force can do. And I agree, that seemed the most likely to me, is that she seems like she's going off to save Mei in that moment. Carlos writes... The power of two. Hey here, Star Wars pals. Thanks for reading my email last time. I feel I'm contractually obligated to comment on the music of the episode, in particular what plays over the end credits. I'm sure I'm not the only one who audibly gasped when the first vocalizations, reminiscent of South Asian vocal percussion, began to sound over the credits, and when a few seconds later we had a full-on pop song with English lyrics. Last time I wrote about how impressed I was with Michael Abels, the composer of the Acolyte's music, and how he, as a newcomer to the franchise, seemed to effortlessly inhabit the musical universe of the galaxy far, far away, created by John Williams and expanded by Kevin Kiner. Only 1 week later, though, the music playing over the end credits of an official Star Wars show is The Power of Two, a down-tempo, sleek R&B earworm co-written and performed by superstar songwriter slash producer Victoria Monet. What a time to be alive. The lyrics clearly comment on the relationship between Osha and Mei, and I think it's very effective as a way of wrapping up the Rashomon-esque pair of episodes 3 and 7. Anyway, I personally love this song, but I'm still not sure how I feel about its placement over the end credits. I wonder what you guys think. Mei the Force be with you, Carlitos.
I was surprised that they were vocal. I don't know. I think for me, so I'm doing a lot of references. For me, the seal got broken with Lord of the Rings, right? Lord of the Rings was incredible vocal scores with Howard Shore, right?
Yep.
But the end of the credits was always vocal.
Pop. Yeah.
That's really a poppy, but...
Well, you had Enya, you had Annie Lennox, and then you have...
Wow.
I can't remember who does the Gollum song in the middle, but... Which is also really good, but a little more thematic.
So, yeah, they're all phenomenal. And so I, with that, and I love those soundtracks. I used to sleep for listening to them going to sleep for years. And so I think this ending with that didn't surprise me at all. I do want to go back and actually look at the lyrics. I just haven't had a chance to yet, but I liked it. It was good. It was unexpected, but it didn't bother me the least, I think, because again, it falls to me very much. I instantly was reminded of Lord of the Rings. What do you guys think?
I've seen some other soundtracks use this in recent years. I think one of the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies had a pop song at the end. I want to say the original Star Trek.
Do you mean the Turtle Power and with the Vanilla Ice doing?
In Star Trek?
No, it's just reminded me.
What are you talking about?
One of my favorite end credit songs.
Not just the end credits. Go Ninja Go.
Yeah.
There's a part where he like crashes through a wall. Vanilla Ice is there. Yeah. No, that's...
Anyways, I'm interested. I will go back when I listen to the... when the second half of this season soundtrack is released, I assume it will be out there and I will have to...
You'll go back and watch Ninja Turtles 2.
Go back and watch Ninja Turtles 2.
I do own that, actually, on DVD.
I thought you were cleaning out the attic.
Yeah, by bringing stuff down to the living room.
It's actually my office, to
be
completely honest.
DVD player?
What do you think, Tony?
I think Ninja Turtles 2 is a great movie.
It is. Not just the third one, but...
The third one's not good.
Time-traveling turtles!
No, I don't care for it. The story is about New York City. It needs to take... No. I thought it was an interesting choice to have... That is... You're derailing me. After I've already derailed us and then re-railed us. I was surprised. I don't know. I don't have strong feelings about music in, I think especially when it's just over the credits versus in the episode, that is a fun place to play with stuff. So I certainly noticed it right away and was like, that's unusual. But I feel like it's kind of fun. So I feel like it kind of cements, we are doing a thing that comes a little bit more from the, like, is this just prestige television that happens to be Star Wars things versus we are making Star Wars.
Finally, our last email comes from Tristan. Hello again, ACP. The penultimate episode just came out with another flashback. And what have we learned? Not much that we didn't already know. The only really new information we have is that Saul killed Mother Anasea and Saul is a creep. Saul's entire character in this episode is to be weirdly possessive over a child he just saw and make absurd assumptions based on almost no information.
Yeah.
And why are there a bunch of explosions? I guess an oil lamp breaking in a building made of stone causes everything to explode. Asked and answered already, Tristan. There's one episode left with a lot to wrap up, and unless it's a feature-length film, I have no faith it will be satisfying. Anyone, keep up the good work. Biff. Two side notes. One, I guess the Jedi bring their Padawans on missions and don't tell them what they're doing for almost 2 months.
Yeah, fair. That was a weird... Yes. Yes.
That's a bad plot explication moment where you're like, as you know, Bob, a thing that you should know because we've been here for 2 months.
But I also love Indar being like, why did you tell him why we're here? I want him to figure it out himself.
Are you a jerk?
Guys, I've talked about this before. The Jedi pedagogical approaches are awful.
Do we think that, what is it called? Canoper Dad would have been a Jedi?
Bean Dad?
Yes.
Bean Dad would not be a Jedi.
The pedagogical approach, though. Anyways, continue.
Indara and Kelnaka are flying over the witch's lair. Indara tells Kelnaka she can't land and will have to jump. More specifically asks if he can make the jump, and he nods. Kelnaka appears in the lair, possessed by the witches. Then a minute later, Indara shows up to free him. So how did you get there so fast? This is what I meant by when I said this feels more like plot-driving characters than characters-driving plot. I agree that was a description of what I was trying to get at. The script requires Indara to be there, despite the previous scene, removing her from the scene. I don't have a concise explanation of this issue. I know all fiction stories are contrived by definition. The problem is whether or not the audience can see it, and I really see it with a lot of live-action Star Wars lately.
Yeah, they needed a way to split the two characters.
I think that is a thing that a lot of TV shows and stories suffer from, and it's hard. Speaking as someone who writes these things, a lot of times you feel like you need stuff in a certain position, and you want to move pieces around, and sometimes it doesn't always make sense upon close scrutiny. I don't always worry about it that much because I think it is a thing that's kind of not exactly endemic's not the right word, but it's very common to stories. And I kind of, that's one of those moments where I do feel like it's a good illustration of stuff where I say, like, I need stuff to be a little tighter. Is you want your connections to be a little more logical and a little less feeling like, okay, I had to move the pieces around to just get them in the right order. Was there another way you could have written that scene? Maybe. I also understand why that was the most sort of expeditious way to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think any way you did it, you don't want to draw away. You don't want to spend any more time with those two characters because you want to focus. So yeah, I understand the shoe.
Yeah, I honestly think you could have taken out that entire spaceship bit. You could have had Kelnaka show up. Doesn't really matter where he came from. Like, we know they're trying to get
behind
in.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. And him and Indara show up a minute later. Like, you could explain it with a line of dialogue as opposed to an entire scene.
Yeah.
But such as it is. That brings us to the end of our letters this week. As always, you can email us at acp@theincomparable.com or find us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. Before we wrap up this week, we need to issue a program note.
Yes. Oh, is this a confession?
Kat, how many pieces of cake did you have?
Still two, Dan. Still two.
You disappeared for part of this episode.
Yeah, Kat, what about that third piece of cake you had in during the episode?
What? No, that's a lie.
Okay, the cake is a lie. Got it.
Yeah,
there's been no cake eating this entire episode.
Wow, that is truly torture.
Anyway, our programming note is Kat and I are traveling for the next couple weeks. So,
but thankfully, you thought about when the last episode of The Acolyte aired, and when you podcast about
so that
it,
we could
when
schedule
purchasing
our
your airline tickets.
Yeah, we scheduled our trip around it. No, we didn't.
What?
Sorry, Tony. Hate to be the bearer of bad news. So it is going to be a little while before we get to record our season finale of A Complicated Profession. So I apologize to those who were looking forward to this directly after. We record like half a week after the episode airs. So our finale recording episode will probably air, I would say a week-ish later than we would normally release. So look for it more like the towards the end of July.
Management apologizes
really
for
a strong look from Kat here. I don't know what that means.
I feel like a week out and later is like it literally means we're landing, coming back home, putting our son like in his crib,
roughly.
And then like immediately recording.
I
jet-lagged.
Said roughly.
Yeah. Sure.
So when you say a week after, you mean
I said ish
seven to 10 business days.
Yes. Yeah.
Business days is key.
Yeah. Yeah. We will be, well, yes, our podcast will be on a truck delivered to you in seven to 10 business days.
We accept cash check and cash on delivery.
Yeah.
We apologize for any inconvenience.
That is such a weird thing that we had for a while. Cash on delivery. Do you ever think about that?
All I know about it is literally when I was a kid.
Exactly.
And they would have all those blue, you remember those
yes.
blue screens?
Yes.
And it would always say no COD. And I don't think I ever understood what that is. It's cash on delivery.
Cash on delivery.
It means you deliver a thing and you don't pay for it until somebody gives it to you, which also kind of makes it like, I want this thing. Why would I pay you first and you might never show up?
Well, idea too is like your cash of like a huge principal agent problem, like these guys showing up delivering.
It's always principal agent problems with you.
Everything is a principal agent problem. But the idea that you'd give cash to someone randomly and they would like get the money.
I'm going to give cash to people randomly and eventually the things I want will show up at my house. I don't see the problem.
It's not really a business model or a way to live.
I did open a piece of mail today and a $10 bill fell out. True story.
What? Was yeah, like one of the things they want you to fill out the survey or something? Because
yeah, the rest of the story
weekend.
Is not very exciting. But yes, I
got
$10
for a survey?
Kat got like $2.
I got $2 for filling out a survey about how much
I
fish.
Yeah, my ideas are worth about five times yours.
What was the survey on?
It was about what TV and radio I listened to.
Wow. That's
yeah,
a good
I was asked to be a Nielsen family. Yeah, and reflecting how
Bridget Nielsen?
What?
No, I'm just trying to figure out which Nielsen.
How
Nielsen
often
family.
Do you get the $10?
Frank Nielsen?
I get it once because they put cash in an envelope, and I put that cash in my wallet, and then I put the letter in the recycling bin.
But this was your attempt to. You could have changed.
No.
We would have filled it out for you.
That's disingenuous.
Oh, that's not true.
Also, I just like in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't need them having my
isn't
data. See, this is the difference between you and me, Kat. $10 cash in an envelope.
Isn't it technically illegal to send cash to the mail?
Ooh.
I thought there was something about that.
Then how would you deliver it?
I'll deliver it, yeah. If you show up, I'll give you $10 for the $10 you're going to give me.
Look.
Anyways.
Wait a minute.
Are we looking this up?
Wait a minute. Well, just how many times have you received like a birthday card with cash in it? You're telling me every time
you cash for your birthday.
Yeah, what? How old are you?
My
still give you cash for your birthday.
That's lovely.
Yep,
that's
story
very
checks
nice.
Out. Never
very
mind.
Nice.
Yeah.
Look, my mom sends
a cash, not
my
a check.
My mom sends a check, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm on a closer relationship with my grandmother than you are with your mother.
You mean my mom writes a thing that has her name on it as opposed to impersonally stucking a $10 bill from your wallet?
Was it Target no longer accepting checks? Like, I don't know. Maybe tell your mom you don't want to take a check.
Dan, do you really want to trust checks from Nebraska? I mean, think about it.
That's fair.
Are you Googling cash?
I don't remember what we were talking about.
I think we were trying to close the show. And
I thought the episode ended about 15 minutes ago, but we're still going.
Recording.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We really appreciate it. We especially appreciate our members at theincomparable.com/members who sign up and get all sorts of good perks, including bootleg episodes and extra content and access to the Incomparable member Discord. It means a lot to us. There are no ads on this show, obviously. We do this because we like the show, but it's also really nice to have the appreciation of our members and their money, but please don't send it through the mail.
It may be illegal. It may not be. Tony is still Googling this.
It's apparently there's a Snopes page about it. Snopes, not Snokes. Snopes page. Yeah, you can totally mail cash.
Why isn't there a Snopes page though? Is there a Snopes page about Snopes?
Why
Snopes
is on this a plane? Episode not over? Please free me.
I think we're just griefing Tony now.
I can't leave until you thank us.
It's a weird contract you signed.
It's like saying Beetlejuice.
Thank you to my co-host Tony Sindelar. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
I love talking about hiking movies anytime. Thank you all.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening to us. And thank you for sticking with us. We'll be back in a couple weeks to talk about the finale of The Acolyte. But until then, may the Force be with you.
And with you.
Sometimes.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members